My friend and engineer Nathan found that song for us. It's called The Adventure from an album called We Don't Need to Whisper. It's the debut album of a group called Angels and Airwaves, fronted by our guest tonight, Tom DeLonge. I get the feeling in talking to Tom that he might be a workaholic because he's in Blink 182, of course, this huge rock band. He has a second band, Angels and Airwaves. He's formed this website that he hopes to turn into a mega site, a clearinghouse for all things ufological and paranormal, called strangetimes.com. And he has time to come on and talk with us. When we come back, we go to the phones, and I've got a couple of questions as well. Stay with us here on Coast to Coast AM. Tom DeLonge, before we open the phone lines, got an interesting email during the break. This is from a guy, I'll just call him Don. He used to work for SAIC, and he says that company moved its main headquarters to Virginia, right back near D.C. He reminds me that Jane's Weekly, back in July 1997, ran this article about SAIC, how it works with a company called EG&G on anti-gravitic propulsion systems. He says that he saw blueprints in 1972 for an anti-gravity thingamajig from Hughes Summa Corporation. Now, Hughes and Summa, of course, are pivotal in the development of Las Vegas. They were involved in all kinds of high-tech secret stuff. I should say also EG&G is the company that got the very first contract to run and operate Area 51. So thought you might find that of some interest.
Yeah, no, that makes perfect sense. When you study Area 51, EG&G, those were the letters of the three scientists that were very much involved in putting that base together. And if you read, like I was mentioning, The Hunt for Zero Point, that book, which is the editor from Jane's Defense Weekly, he speaks. There's a lot about Hughes Aircraft and Martin Marietta, and before his Lockheed Martin, and yeah, it's like all these things they all point back to each other. And this is in the 70s he's talking about, right?
Yeah,
Yeah, it's
way back.
interesting.
Who knows what they've got now? Let's open up the phone lines. Going to start with the Skype line. Victor in Los Angeles. Hi, Victor. Thanks for calling in.
Yeah, hi. How are you doing, George? This evening
Okay, what's on your mind?
Or morning. Yes, back in the late 90s, I had opportunities. I was living in the north of Blythe, and there's March Air Force Base just south of Blythe. And approximately around 8:30 p.m., I would observe there were triangular-shaped crafts actually coming interplanetary, just coming into the atmosphere and landing there at March Air Force Base. Like on time, like timely, right there by like let's say about 20 minutes to come in, and about right at 8:30, just right at that point it would be coming in for a landing. So it would be actually coming right overhead from where I was located. Okay, so I was just going to ask your guest, he's familiar with any say whistleblowers or anybody he's heard that may have had observations of that in that area?
Well, the observations of the Black Triangle craft, and I mentioned a couple of times earlier, have been around for 2 years now. There was somebody that came out that claimed he was an engineer that worked on it, and this is always how these things happen. It's a very normal formula where someone comes out and says, "Hey, I'm somebody that worked on one of these craft," and then right around that time, that craft starts to show up in a few photos, a few videos. It might buzz an airplane or something. And this guy called it the Astra TR-3B, or TR-3B. Then the nickname for it was called the Locust. But either way, it's real. And either way, it looks like it's an American craft. And I don't quite know why they put it out there. I'm assuming they want other countries to see it. And I'm assuming they want other countries to ask a lot of questions about it and get a little scared, because what else would be the reason? I couldn't imagine why they would show off their prime piece of technology. But this Black Triangle has been around for quite some time.
There's one called the Black Manta too, wasn't there? That was sort of a black triangle, but that was smaller than some of these gigantic ones that you would see over highways and cities.
Yeah, this one looks, this one, I don't know the size of it. It looks pretty large. But it's definitely it definitely looks otherworldly. I mean, I think when you see this in photos and videos, it almost looks like it's out of Kubrick's 2001, like a monolith or something. Because but these things, they fly on a completely different mechanism than an airplane. They can be silent. I mean, they don't need propellers. They don't have engines that make the normal type of noise. And they can toy with other aircraft. And back in the early 90s, there was a camera that NASA allowed on the International Space Station, maybe it was the space shuttle, is one of the two, and through pay-per-view, you're allowed to stream this feed. And the astronauts were all freaking out with what they saw out the window, and there's this a UFO coming over the horizon of the Earth, and this is in low Earth orbit, and something got shot at it from a satellite or from somewhere lower outside of the window, and the UFO just took off into space, and it just missed it. We were shooting at this thing. And so everyone's like going, oh, my God, you know, this was on CNN. This has been like – this is a very, very popular piece of film because it was sanctioned from NASA, but it was obviously something that changed directions. Then that they came out and said it was ice particles and did that whole kind of dance.
But, right, I remember that.
But the point was – that was a show for something, and all those things, they always happen for a reason. It's not like there just happened to be a camera and we happened to be shooting at aliens coming in. I think it's all part of a big plan for something to either scare people, ourselves, or other countries, or you know, if you want to go along with what Dr. Greer and Carol Rosen were saying, with Wernher von Braun said, it's all a big ploy to make people invest into Star Wars defense systems, and that's basically how SAIC makes its money.
Hey, Victor, are you still there? Victor's gone. I was just going to ask Victor how big this thing was that he saw out there near Blythe, because there was and I asked because back in the late 80s, a group called NIDS, the National Institute for Discovery Science, formed by Bob Bigelow and based here in Las Vegas, did an interesting study about the Black Triangle sightings all over the country. The predominance of them over highways and in the vicinity of air bases, Air Force bases, strongly suggesting, of course, the big black triangles that people have been seeing for years are some sort of secret technology made here on Earth and controlled by our Air Force. And Victor, I was wondering how big this thing was, like block out the sun or block out the sky kind of big, or what?
No, well, at the altitude I've seen it, it was coming. I was observing, as I would see a red light with two white lights, the red lights blinking, and two white lights approximately, I would say, it could have been like half a mile wide, okay? So as it was observed, it's always on nights where it's not a full moon. It was coming down, about the time it got over the area I was at, it could have been outside of a 2-foot ball field, okay? So knowing that Blythe was, March Air Force Base is about maybe 2 miles, maybe 5 miles from where I was at. It obviously just took up a lot of space, and it would just black out the starlight.
Well, half a mile wide is a pretty damn big plane.
That's pretty big. Absolutely, it's not a plane. It was definitely not a plane. Or, and they're used to that area because Blythe is like a good maybe 100 miles away from this area. And that whole valley is nothing in there but a prison, okay? So after a certain time, the prison is locked down. So at 9:30, in comes another one. So after the prison's locked down, obviously I'm seeing that there's got to be a flight pattern of every hour of these black triangular-shaped craft coming in by just like a regular airport coming into March Air Force Base.
Wow.
I guess maybe you call them a platform or something like that instead of a plane.
What's interesting, I mean, there's been many UFO, out in Stevensville and in Texas, those sightings that happen out there, the same kind of thing where there's craft that are – you know, a mile long or half a mile long. Those are, those are seen. And Art Bell, even years ago, when he was on the radio, was talking about a big black triangle that was massive like that out there near Rachel, Nevada. And it makes you wonder, there's a lot of, I think, we just recently, Area 51 in the past, 5 or 7 years, built one of the biggest hangars ever known out there. And what's in something that massive,
And it's called Hangar 18, by the way, coincidentally enough. Hey, Victor, thanks for that call. We're going to the wild card line, Cornelius in Louisiana. Good morning, Cornelius.
Good morning, Tom and George. I want to say God bless both of y'all and hope y'all have a happy and blessed Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
Well, same to you. What's on your mind?
I want to thank Gina, your call screener. I was just wondering, like you, George, you really investigate these things on UFOs and stuff like that. I was just wondering if Mr. Tom, if he's going to be on, like, Ancient Aliens. They had aliens and angels on tonight, so I'll take my answer off the air.
Okay.
I haven't been asked to be on that show. I think it's a wonderful show. I think that, and from my research, it looks like there has been a lot of civilizations that have lived on this planet for a very long time, and they come and they go, and they come and they go. And it goes right back to when I went over to the building at SAIC, and they had these two Egyptian-looking guys in these thrones holding pyramids that say the past and the future, as though, you know, there were pyramids that were built in the past, and we're making our way to get back to that point in civilization in the future. And that that goes right along the lines of that there might have been something in our past that was much more advanced than we are now.
I got a strange ad somebody sent me about a conference. It's not actually a conference. It's more like a journey to the Mayan pyramid at Chichen Itza. If you want to be there when the winter solstice kicks in December 2012, actually inside the pyramid, it's like $4,000 or $5,000 or something, and won't happen again for another 5,000 years. And that sounds like a pretty cool trip, but I'm not expecting anything big to happen. What about you on that whole topic of 2012, end of the world, end of the Mayan calendar? You have any thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, it seems that there's only two references about this changing of this time, and it's very normal. I remember at the Millennium, my band played at Times Square, and everyone thought it was going to be the end of the world, and I did too. And I'm going, at least I played at Times Square in the Millennium, so if everything explodes, I'm here. But it just seems like there's always going to be a new date where everything ends, it just happened with that church that was taking out billboards through Los Angeles. I saw them all the time where they just like, oh, it's going to happen in October, and it didn't happen. He's like, oh, my bad, But I don't believe that there's going to be any kind of end. I don't believe that we're all going to explode. I don't believe any of that. It happens every few years. They come up with a new date. I do believe that they had some fantastic knowledge, because the Mayans had incredible, incredible charts of the solar system and the way it worked. They had it down like a Swiss watch over like 23,000 year patterns, and so I think that there's something there. But there's nowhere that it's saying that we're all just going to explode and die in some weird way. I don't buy into that. I just think that people are searching really, really hard for some crazy, crazy, scary Armageddon truth. And Jacques Vallée specifically, that's what his whole study was about, and for the people listening that don't know who Jacques Vallée was, he's the basis of the French scientist in Spielberg's Close Encounters of the Third Kind. I mean, Spielberg made the main character about this scientist. He was a astrophysicist from France. And what he always thought was weird about the UFO equation was when everyone wanted to study the UFOs, he was just like, there's no way we can study those things because they're untouchable. We don't know when they're going to show up. We can't go up and talk to them. He's all, but what's more interesting to me is what it's doing to people. So he started studying the people that saw these things and started to realize that they were starting cults, or it was changing their belief system, or they were getting physically harmed or going around and trying to convert people to different thought processes. And that's no different than the whole Mayan 2012 thing to me. And I think for somebody that's really interested in what the paranormal does to human beings and how they think, they need to read some more of Vallée's books.
Well, as you know, and from our earlier conversations off the air, Jacques Vallée is, I think, the most important person to ever write on these topics. It's been my pleasure to call him a friend and also to have the chance to interview him on this program a couple of times. And our listeners are very familiar with his work. I mean, he's a class act all the way, that's for sure. We're going to jump down to east of the Rockies. Tanner in Ohio has been hanging on for a while. Good morning, Tanner.
Hey, how's it going?
Okay. What's on your mind?
This is a question for Tom. Actually, I have two questions. Tom, I actually had the opportunity to meet you over the summer at a Blossom Music Center in Cleveland, Ohio. I was at the meet and greet, and I gave you a little green alien. Do you still happen to have that?
I probably do. I get a lot of gifts, and I keep them in a big box in my house. So
especially aliens.
Yeah, well, that actually kind of, the question before someone answered my question. My question was, what exactly do you think is going to happen on December 12th, 21st, 2012? Do you think it's going to involve any awakening on how the public views extraterrestrials or, some sort of awakening?
Well, my answer for you is what I think is in store for 2012 actually is really exciting, because ever since we put up the Kepler mission through NASA, where the satellites that look for variances and in distant stars of their light where they can detect planets. And I think they've detected so many planets that they're getting ready to announce next year, I believe, that there are habitable planets everywhere in the universe. And I think the next thing that can happen this next year is as we have Curiosity, the rover that's landing on Mars, is specifically looking for signs of life. And I think if there's ever an exciting year for an awakening, it's going to be 2012, to where we can say, yes, it looks like there are planets everywhere that have potentially have water and life, and it looks like our next door neighbor has some form of life right now. And that could just be some type of microbes or bacteria or a plant here and there. But I think there's going to be plants. I think there's going to be water. I think there's going to be algae. But if all that happens next year, that to me will be a massive awakening. That'll be one of the biggest awakenings that human beings have ever, probably be the biggest one we've ever had, because we'll say, okay, well, it's not really all about us. And we've all kind of known that, but at least science is now saying it.
Well, I have to agree with you. Confirmation of life somewhere else, especially if it turns out to be intelligent life, would be the biggest development in human scientific history. I just think that even something as dramatic as the proverbial landing on the White House lawn, if there's any way they can deny it or hide it, they will. And that somehow they'd find a way to screw it up or put a blanket over it or something, because there are forces that just don't want people to take this stuff seriously. My opinion, anyway. Tanner, thank you for that call. West of the Rockies, Sean in Idaho. Hi, Sean.
Hi. I just want to say that, Tom, you were an inspiration for me to pick up the guitar when I was 13. I'm now 23 and playing 10 years strong, so thank you for that.
Right on.
And my question is, earlier you're talking about how 10 years ago, you know, you would talk about the topics you guys have been talking about, and people would just put it off, you know, and just say that, you know, it's a load of crap, you know. And now, you know, it seems each year people are starting to believe it more and more. And my question basically is, where do you see the fate of humanity in, like, the next 100 years? Like, what, as far as government and space travel and just stuff like that, I guess.
Well, you know, I'm not, I don't know if I'm qualified to say, but I do think if you follow what's been happening, I think something really massive happened after World War II, where the part of the free world got together and said, we can never let something this evil happen again. So they really invested heavily into creating a world system, you know, and a lot of people call it, you know, the one world government and the new world order and all this stuff. But I really do believe that countries such as the United States and Great Britain invested in being able to put central banks around the world and create an economy that can kind of spread these ideals, whether it's through goods and services and products or whatever. And I think if you look at technology and the way it's, you know, we're developing, Kurzweil, the inventor, labeled it the singularity, where in a few years' time, computer chips are going to basically be as strong as the human brain. So I think when you put those two things together, it looks like there will be a one-world economy kind of quasi-government where we will have the ability to not only enhance ourselves and our bodies, but we'll be able to have computers and machines that can think through issues with the human race a lot better and quicker, possibly, than we can, for better or for worse. And maybe we'll not do things like have normal wars with each other anymore, because we will be able to put it through an algorithm and find out it's not the best thing to do.
Sean, thank you for that call. I wish I shared Tom's optimism, but I don't know. That same kind of technology can be used for bad stuff, and it just seems like the people who run things are not always altruistic in their ultimate aims. Stay with us. More of your phone calls from my guest Tom DeLong on Coast to Coast AM. That voice there sounds remotely familiar. The band is called Faces. The lead singer there is Rod Stewart, gravelly-voiced guy way back when. The song's called Flying, and it's pretty good. Almost sounded like Humble Pie there when I first heard that, and thanks to Nathan for digging it up. My guest is Tom DeLong of Blink-182 and also of StrangeTimes.com. Been a lively conversation so far. We have one more segment, and we'll get to as many of your questions as we can. Stay with us on Coast to Coast AM. Tom DeLong, a suggestion about your website, strangetimes.com. I don't know if you heard our first hour guest, William Pepper, or whether you're involved or all that interested in assassination conspiracy theories, but the story he told about Sirhan Sirhan and and the evidence that they've accumulated, that's a pretty good one.
You know, I didn't get the chance to hear it, but I know a little bit about it. And you know, I one of the coolest things that ever happened to me, I remember that when it wasn't too many years ago, that they released the tapes from the Oval Office during the Cuban Missile Crisis, and I was at a Borders Books and Music buying these discs of JFK and the debates that were happening during probably one of the most stressful times in the world. And my phone rings, and I answer the phone, and I'm in line with these tapes of JFK, and I go, hello, and it's all Tom DeLonge. I said, yes, Earl, this is Ted Kennedy. And I was like, what? You know,
it's kind of a coincidence.
He's like, hey, I'm here with John Kerry. We want you to come out and campaign with us. And that's how I started, and I did a big campaign with John Kerry when he was trying to beat George Bush on his second term. And but that was my I guess that's you know, as close as I can get to.
That's some weird synchronicity. And of course, you know, Ted Kennedy calls me all the time too. It happens all the time.
I know, it was such a cool story. I was really honored.
First-time caller, Melissa in Indiana. Good morning, Melissa. How you doing?
Actually, it's Malin. I'm sort of nervous, and I wasn't expecting to get on, so I fudged a few things.
Okay, like your name and your state, or are you really in Indiana?
No,
okay.
Just my name. My name's Malin. I'm from Indiana.
Okay,
anyways,
Malin.
I was going to ask, the next Angels and Airwaves movie is going to be Poet Anderson. You said before it's about, like, dreams and near-death experiences, so could you elaborate a bit more on that?
Sure. George, so you understand, Angels and Airwaves, that we're kind of into this idea where we want to release albums and movies together, kind of merge the film industry and the music industry together, but we want to do each project about large topics about the human race. And this we just did one called Love, so we just released a science fiction film and a double album about an astronaut stranded in the International Space Station. But this next one that she's referring to, Poet Anderson, it will be our next film that we make. We're in the middle of making doing the script right now, and the idea is to tackle dreams. There was a really interesting study that came out, I think it was at Stanford, where they were coming to the conclusion that when you dream and when you have nightmares specifically to prepare you for that happening in real life, so that when it happens, you've already kind of ran the scenario in your mind. So I like the idea of having your dreams mean so much, so when you wake up, you can do something that is very important, not only for yourself but for the world around you. And so that absolutely is the type of topics that we're going to jump into with Poet.
Wow, that's very ambitious. I mean, it's just more than just find a good script, make a movie kind of a thing.
Yeah, we're kind of an ambitious band. We're like the biggest small band in the world.
Malin, thank you for that call. Appreciate it. JD in Tulsa, Oklahoma has been holding on for a long time. JD, what's on your mind?
Oh, I appreciate all the music. Tom's been making for all the years, about the past 15, 17, 20 years.
Wow.
I got a question. I'm just curious that with everything that's been coming out, I mean, you know a lot. Believe me, I give you respect for your knowledge. And you kind of dodged the question about being a Freemason. Are you part of the alien agenda that's slowly releasing things?
Aha.
Wait, I didn't quite understand the question. What was it?
JD, still there?
Yes, I am.
You want to repeat the question?
Tom, like I said, I appreciate all the music. It's been coming out about the past 15, 18 years. It's Blink-182. Missed you on a civic tour here in Tulsa, Oklahoma. But I'm just curious, with all the information that you have and that you know all the depth knowledge, are you part of the alien agenda that's coming out soon? Because you kind of dodged the question about Freemasons and Illuminati.
Okay, I understand. I think that, you know, I'm definitely not a part of any direct agenda. But I do think there's parts of my life over the past few years that have played into some agenda. I think that I've been a part of a couple different things that have been really odd coincidences in my life. That I we talked about a little bit of it earlier when I was doing some stuff with Dr. Stephen Greer and his organization, and a few weird things happened where I felt like potentially I was being used for someone's benefit, but you know who, I don't know. I have my own ideas, but I'm not a part of an organization specifically trying to out some some grand directive. But I do think that I do think that myself and a few others can be a part of kind of a revolution of these topics over the next few years, similar to what's happening with young people on the other side of the world, where they're kind of taking control. And I think that it's very possible in the next few years that we'll start to hear some more answers.
JD, appreciate that call. Wildcard line, Roger in Delaware. Good morning, Roger.
Yeah, I was curious, Tom, what your thoughts are on the alien abduction phenomenon, and also whether you'd read the new book that's out, the autobiography of Ace Frehley from Kiss, where he mentions at the very end of the book that he may have recently had an alien abduction and that they left a burn mark in his yard, and pretty wild.
Yeah, that's a good question. I think that Bud Hopkins and John Mack were doing extraordinary research into alien abductions. I mean, you have this happening with hundreds of thousands of people all across the globe. So the whole point was either hundreds of thousands of people are having the same hallucination or this is really happening. But one of the problems is specifically that Jacques Vallée, once again, came to a hypothesis that it's not really mapping up with what is happening with abductions and what advanced extraterrestrials might be. And he actually even had an incident that happened down in South America. There's a guy that specifically came out, and it was called his name. Well, there's an abduction with a guy named Vilas Boas, and there's a guy that worked for the Inter-American Defense College, and he came out and said he was present on a CIA psychological operation in 1978, where they would take these helicopters that are outfitted with lights and spray stuff over these Latin American farmers and abduct them, and they would wake up. And this very specific guy that was a part of this one that he sat in on. Came back and said, I saw aliens, and they talked about hybrids and all this different stuff. And I think that there's a lot more to this. Jacques Vallée believed this so much, though, he wrote a book called Fast Walkers. I don't know if you know that, George, that he wrote a fictional book trying to paste together a story of what he thinks the government is actually doing with these abductions and with trying to understand how people would act in coming in contact with aliens, and it's just a big psychological warfare game. You know, it's pretty convoluted, but I think there's a truth there somewhere, but I don't know if it's necessarily aliens.
Well, you know, it's like everything else in the UFO field. There's a kernel of truth there. Figuring out what's true and what isn't is pretty difficult. And sometimes there are people who make it difficult on purpose. There are a lot of people that I've interviewed who've had abduction experiences and who have physical evidence and additional witnesses to back it up. Their stories sure sound real. And the explanations given for what might have happened to them are weak at some point. And I think that there are some of those things that are telling it as it happened. And I also believe your scenario that there are others who make things happen for psychological reasons, for who knows what reason, and if nothing else, to cloud the topic, to muddy the waters.
There's also a big paranormal element to this. I mean, Jacques Vallée really believed that there's a consciousness game at play, you know, and
yep.
It's not these types of paranormal, whether they're vampires or witches or there's stuff that's been happening to human beings for thousands of years. And it seems like they're always kind of the same scenarios, but they just kind of change shape or they change color. And so I think there's something to be looked at there as well, as more of an interdimensional kind of not necessarily just a physical being traveling here from another planet. I think it's more complicated than that. I really don't believe that there's a very advanced civilization that will come and abduct a human being and accidentally burn them or accidentally scar them. But then, you know, then there's that Dr. Lear that actually is finding implants in people. And these are like nanotechnology implants, carbon nanotubes. And then they're emitting frequencies, radio signals or whatever. But the frequencies they're emitting are reserved for deep space communication within NASA. So why would NASA be using those same frequencies? And so it starts to get kind of weird.
It does get weird. Jokesters, tricksters, skinwalkers, shapeshifters. I've been down that road myself. I agree with Jacques Vallée that if the solution to this mystery is something as simple as other beings traveling here from planets, it's going to be greatly disappointing. You mentioned Dr. Roger Lear, by the way. He's just been released from the hospital, I'm told, by some friends of his earlier this evening. He's got a tough road ahead health-wise, and we wish him very well. Thank you, Roger, for that call. And from Boulder City, right around the corner here in my neck of the woods, Al has a call and a question for Tom DeLong.
Hey, George. How are you?
Okay. How's it going?
You got a great show. I probably won't be calling in again. Just going to be the first and only, and I want to listen in the future. But nice to meet Tom DeLong. Tom?
Yes, sir.
I have to tell you something. You do have a purpose. You've been recruited. I think you have the country's best interest at heart. In 24 years, I took the oath of secrecy to protect and serve this country, okay? That's why it's going to be my first and only call coming in. Just got to tell you, you've been selected, recruited for the best interest of this country. That's a statement. Now, you sometimes feel that some of the sensitive information that you've alluded to, that you've educated yourself, others have shared with you, do you feel that we are in control of the best interests of this country and using folks like yourself? Believe it or not, as a civilian, I believe you are protecting and serving this nation with some of the contacts and the information that you share. And I'm just going to tell you, at 67 years old, Cuban Missile Crisis, I was in the military. Gulf Breeze 87, Eglin Air Force Base, myself. I live out here in Boulder City. I know about Area 51. I met people about Montauk Point and the Philadelphia experience and Brookhaven Lab in Suffolk County. If you take a look at Area 51, you take a look at Eglin Air Force Base and at Gulf Breeze, the government and the people who serve this country are very smart. You take the Gulf of Mexico, hundreds of miles, and you got Gulf Breeze, Eglin. You got the Area 51 and the terrain we have here. You take Montauk Point, you got the Atlantic Ocean. I have to believe some of the people and civilian like yourself, George is a facilitator of communication with information, which I appreciate, George, your station. And I'm not making a speech for myself. For the people who never get on, I've been lucky to get on today. You must contribute and you must listen to the station because you will get more information and plausible deniability, blah, blah, blah. But my question to Tom, do you feel that you served this well? Do you feel like you've been used, abused, or are you proud to serve with the information you have? I'm just going to listen to you now.
Thanks, Al.
It's funny, I've been through all the different iterations of ufology, and when you first get into it, you start to think there's like a cabal, and then you start to think there's like, you know, they're working with aliens. You kind of go through all these different levels, but what you end up finding out is there are some very, very smart people that work in the government. There are a lot of very, very smart, powerful people that can keep secrets, and then you start to realize that there are some really scary things happening throughout the globe between all the different countries that are going on. And there really is a hidden series of wars that are happening in ways that you have to do the research to find it. But everyone's not all just hunky-dory and good friends. So I believe that there's a reason we're spending a lot of money in these channels. I believe that there's a reason we're hiding this technology, and I believe there's a reason that, I think they make mistakes. I think they hurt people. I think they make some bad decisions. But I think overall, the United States and its partners are really trying to make these big moves to protect the interests of free people. And I think that it's a scary game. And I think that, you know, just today, Iran is, you know, just released video of someone working for the CIA. They got him. I mean, you don't know what's going to happen to this guy, but he's in there in the middle of Tehran trying to spy for our, you know, for our well-being over here. And I think it's just I think there's a lot more that's going on that has a lot more gravity to it than people understand. They just like to think it's a few people that are working with aliens and have all the money and all this stuff. And I think there's instances of people that make bad decisions, but I really do think that there's a lot of responsibility that goes in these channels of some of the topics we're talking about.
Well, I've often have questioned people who are sort of in a position to know about the secrets there, Captain, reasons for it. And, you know, you speak to a group and say you stick up for the people's right to know, and we need to know, and you got to spill the secrets. But you also have to question whether there might be a reason for keeping some of this stuff secret if the ultimate truth is so terrible and or unsettling that it really would cause problems. That if that were the case, then the people who are keepers of the secret, you don't know if they're operating in their interests or in our interests. It's tough. And as you addressed earlier, Tom, the possibility exists that you are part of somebody's plan, that you have played a role without your knowledge. I've had that same question in my mind tumble around. And I'm sure that in light of the fact that I haven't been stopped from pursuing these topics after all these years, that I must be doing that something that someone wants.
Yeah, I would have to agree with you. And I think that, you know, if people really knew all the facts, people really knew that someone was trying to smuggle in a nuclear weapon through Canada that had Russian parts, that was from some other rogue country, you know, if people really knew that we had a craft that were flying in low Earth orbit and being shot at by China and all these, who knows? I'm just making this stuff up, but I think that those things are really happening. That becomes very, very scary. And I think it's like one of those things where you're in school and you think you're going to get in some big fist fight and you get that knot in your stomach. I couldn't imagine the knot in your stomach you get when you find out that there's another country doing its damnedest to either tear your economy down, tear down your banking systems, or sneak in some type of weapon, or do psychological warfare against you, or release a virus, or you know, it's. I just think it's scary, you know, and I think you always got to look between the lines and kind of guess what's happening. Remember that big power outage that happened in New York a few years ago, like where there's millions of people walking the street and no one really knew why. It's like that could have been, you know, someone could have done that to us. And I think if that's what happened, that's another thing saying, okay, you know, I think there's like a lot of those types of things that are happening. You have to look and kind of go, okay, well, this might be being perpetrated by somebody, and I don't.
Hey, well, Tom DeLonge, it has been a fascinating discussion. It's been a lot of fun. You're going to have to come out here to Nevada, and we can go run around the desert, and I'll show you a couple of places of interest.
Right. Well, I had such a fun time. I appreciate you having me on here.
Absolutely. It was great, and best of luck with strangetimes.com. Folks, if you haven't seen it, take a look at it. I want to say thank you to Nathan and Gina and Tim Binall, our webmaster, also to my first guest, William Pepper. To Robert Knight, our photographer friend, and, of course, to Tom DeLonge. Merry Christmas, everyone. Happy holidays. Hope you have a good one. Talk to you next week. Bye.